the optimum performance payout proposition and result from the purchase they make with you. And if that means that they got to buy more things to add to it, that's in their best interest. As their advisor, you can't let them not know that. You can't be timid about sharing it with them. You can't retreat just because you got a little sale and be thankful that you just made money. That's stealing benefit from them, and you cannot, in good ethical moral conscience, do that any longer. Next question. Do I need to make money on a first-time buyer, or am I satisfied with only breaking even because I make so much on the back end, on the repurchase, on all the other products and services I can sell? And should I re-strategize my entire acquisition approach? Next question. Do I ever barter my products, services, or assets with other companies in exchange for their products or services or assets to extend my budget, to enhance my reach, to reduce my cost, to improve my margins, to access product services, marketing, and impact I normally couldn't justify for cash? Barter can make incredible differences in what you do if you experiment with it. And it lets you basically increase your purchasing power by a figure that's equal or exceeds your margin. If you've got a 5-time markup in what you do, and you can trade your products at full retail for products or services you'd normally buy, you just bought those services for 4/5 less. If you have a very desirable product, you might be able to double the amount of somebody else's product you get for 1x yours, because they have more margin. If there's anything you buy that you could trade for, you ought to consider doing that, because it lowers your cost, it increases your margin, gives you access to lots of stuff you couldn't have access to on your own. Next question. What kind of a guarantee or warranty do you currently give your clients to take away the risk of the transaction? And how does it compare? How does it denominate? How dimensional is it compared to your competitors? Next one. Do you know your client attrition rate? If so, what is it? If so, what are you doing, or what can you do to eliminate attrition, to reduce it? Why are people leaving? There's only 3 reasons. They had a bad experience, they had interruption in their activity, and they unintentionally stopped and never came back, or they outgrew the need or the use for your product. If they had a bad experience, you got to make it right because you have a moral obligation, and they got to contact them and figure out what has to be done to make the last transaction they had with you a satisfying one. If they stopped unintentionally and never came back, just by connecting with them will normally reactivate them. If they outgrew you, it's a wonderful time to contact them again, because it's a perfect time, if they were satisfied with you, to get tons and tons of referrals. Next, how do you currently capture names, addresses, data, phone numbers, all kinds of important information about your clients, and what do you do with it? What's the picture it paints? What's the insight that it tells you? How do you really add on? How do you act on it? How do you really maximize it strategically? Do you? Next. What is your average order, transaction size, amount? Do you really know the marginal net worth? Do you really know the 3-way to grow business dynamics? Have you ever analyzed it? Can you? Will you? Do you? When? Do it. Next. How much is the initial sale to a new client worth on average, worst case? I swear to you, if you don't know that, you'll never maximize. If you do know that, I pity everyone competing against you, because the playing field just got leveled. They're out of the game. You own the market when you understand your allowable cost. Next, do you joint venture with other people? Have you identified all the businesses out there that you could have a strategic alliance with, who could endorse you, who you could endorse, who could have a strategic, ongoing, positive, qualitative, highly favorable, wonderfully predisposed introduction of you and your product, company, and services to their clients? If not, you're losing opportunity. Those are only a few of probably 500 questions we ask our clients when we work with them privately, but just gauging where you are, knowing where you're trying to get to, putting the two together will make quantum inroads in getting you there faster, safer, and helping you figure out optimally the highest and best way for you to do it that works best for who you are, how you want to grow it, the fun you want to have, the people you want in your business, the assets you want to deploy. Different people will adopt different strategic and optimal approaches, and that's good, because the whole world is a canvas. And what I've just given you in this program is the ultimate palette of paint. You can paint any kind of picture you want in any kind of media you want. You want it to be oil. You want it to be watercolor. You want it to be chalk. You want it to be pencil. You want it to be modern. You want it to be classic, traditional. It's all up to the vision you have. And in finality, the last point I want to make is you have so much more infinite control of what you create, of how you create it, of how high and wide and impactful you create. But the most important thing to realize is this. You have the opportunity to impact so many more people. You can enrich the quality of life. You can bring joy to people. You can bring protection to people. You can bring enrichment to people. Not just the people who buy from you, the people you pay. You have such an opportunity to protect, to enhance, to guide, to counsel, to build the preeminent authoritative leader in your field. And I don't care if you're selling ice cream cones and telling people what's the greatest flavor and you're feeling great about it. You got a joy. You got to really be able to exhilarate in the joy and the protection that you give to people because you're in their life, because you've made their life better because you're there. Until and unless you realize this and you adopt the strategy of preeminence, you won't come close to maximizing. Once you do, I swear to you, doubling, tripling, quadrupling of your business over a very, very rapid and surprisingly short timeline, easier, faster, safer, and more joyously than you ever imagined possible, is not only doable, it's predictable. I've given you more in these few tapes than most people will ever learn in a lifetime. I've saved you having to spend tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars retaining me. Now, all I ask in return is that you agree to do something with what I've shared. Don't make it your intellectual entertainment. That would be shameful. Everything I've given you is totally actionable. Everything I've given you is intellectually easy to understand, embrace, and more specifically, very simple and very immediate to apply. If you fail yourself, if you fail the market potential of all those people you could be helping, it would be tragic. Good luck. Let's talk now about the immense power of a well-crafted sales letter. Let's talk about the fact that no matter what business you're in or going to start, no matter whether you're trying to prospect for new clients, whether you're basically trying to get existing ones to buy again or buy more things, whether you're trying to reactivate them, whether you're trying to just stay in touch and alert them, one of the most powerful, one of the most predictable, and one of the most strategically critical tools you'll ever use in your business activities is a well-crafted letter. But the basics of writing an effective sales letter are not known to many people. Let me give you a quick tour de force, short course overview primer on it. It'll take a few minutes, but it'll transform your ability to impact, influence, and persuade people ethically to see then seize the proposition and the offer that you want to make to them. So let's start. First of all, there's a simple 7 foolproof formula for writing powerful sales letters. Number 1, say something that gets the reader's attention. Now, that may seem obvious, and yet if you look at 95% of all the sales letters and all the brochures and all the flyers and all the notes and all the emails out there, almost all of them are either innocuous, they don't say anything, self-serving, they're all about the writer, they have nothing whatsoever to do with the interest or the desires or the benefits or advantages to the recipient, the reader. You gotta have it say something that gets the reader's attention, and the easiest way, frankly, to get anyone's attention is to write about something that's critically and essentially important to them and them only. Number 2, tell the reader why he or she should be interested. Don't assume that anyone obviously or logically knows the reason why. Don't assume anyone sees the connection or the correlation. Make a point to make that connection for them. Number 3, tell the reader why he or she should believe what you are saying and why it's true. Credentialize it. Establish the facts. Produce authoritative evidence in the communication that demonstrates instantly, continually, and compellingly that what you're saying is gospel. It really is the truth, and they can believe it. Number 4, prove it's true with examples, with case studies, with references, with citings of research, with whatever kind of obvious validation is appropriate depending on what you're trying to sell or offer and who you're trying to offer it to. You got to be either more sophisticated or less, more embellished or simple, depending on what you're trying to accomplish. Trying to get someone to come down to your ice cream store to try a new flavor, that's not so hard. Trying to get someone basically to agree to an appointment or to visit your booth at a trade show because you've got $500,000 pieces of complex software, that requires a lot more dimension, a lot more documentation, a lot more proof. Number five, itemize and describe all the benefits of your product or service. People don't really buy products and services. People don't really buy features. People buy the benefits, the results, the advantages, the impact that products or services at work, implemented and functioning in their enterprise, in their business, in their lives, produce. And a classic example that I always use is that people, when they buy a drill, they don't really want a drill. They want a hole. And you got to realize, people are buying holes. A drill is only a mechanism to facilitate it. So when you itemize and describe all the benefits of your product or service, focus again. Benefits are very different than features. A TV may have 25 complex electronic features, none of which really are appreciated until you translate or correlate what those features mean in terms of benefits to the television set buyer. In other words, 9 million pixels per square inch doesn't mean anything. That's a feature. But if you say, this TV is 5 times clear, it's got movie theater quality vision, that's a great benefit. Surround sound sounds neat, but what's it mean? It means that it sounds like you're in a concert. It sounds like every activity is happening right in front of your eyes. It sounds like people are coming out of the screens and you're part of the whole process. You're either in the movie or on the show or there in your home. Well, that benefit, that experiential perception of what's going on is 10, 100, 1,000 times more powerful of a goal to achieve than just listing a feature. Next, tell the reader how to respond. The key to direct response marketing, and the kind of letters that I recommend everybody I ever advise, and I'm advising you through this program, follow, is direct response letters. Direct response are self-explanatory. You are directing the reader, the recipient, to a response, to a controlled, not a manipulated, but a directed response. You got to tell them what they should do. You got to tell them how to do it. You got to tell them why they should do it. And you got to tell them when they should do it, or guess what? Left to our own devices, the vast majority of us have so many diversions, so many competing impacts upon our lives, not the least of which is we get 3 to 10,000 advertising or sales intrusions in our life every day. Not every week or month, every day. We get literally 70,000 of the max in a week. If you got my attention now, you don't want to ever assume that I will do anything on my own, because not that I'm not impressed, not that I'm not even interested, not that I don't need the result of your product or service, I get diverted. So while you've got my interest, while I'm in the mode, you got to direct me all the way past the goal line to action. Finally, you got to tell me exactly what to do and how to order. Now, let me reduce this to what's called the AIDA formula, the AIDA formula, because it's very simple. I've given you the 7 foolproof formulas for writing a powerful sales letter. Now let's look at it into some reference frames that you got to always keep in the back of your mind. Number one, you got to grab the reader's attention. And as I said, the simplest, the easiest, probably the best way to do it is to write a headline or an opening paragraph in the letter that basically telegraphs to them what the greatest, most powerful, most important, self-serving benefit they can expect to receive, experience, or get from either A, reading the letter, B, taking the steps in the letter that you're asking them to take, whether it be to come in, call in, buy, order, inquire, talk to somebody, and 3, showing them that they'll have a transformational impact in their life or business from the results that your product or service will produce for them. And you can do that in a headline. And we're going to go through some headlines in a minute. Number 2, remember, the AIDA formula, AIDA. First, attention. Number two, deepen the reader's interest. You do that by dimensionalizing, by telling a story, by getting context, background, proof. Number three, the D, increase the reader's desire. If they don't want it, they aren't going to buy it. They got to want it because they see the advantage. You're selling advantage. You're selling benefit. You're selling result. You're not selling product and service, and you're absolutely not selling features. Features are not unimportant. They are a useful bridge to give you a slide, if you will, that lets people easily flow to why a product or service offers such a great benefit. It gives them credibility. It gives them basis. But what you're selling is never features. People don't buy features. People buy the results. They buy the benefit. Number four, the last A. First is attention. Next is interest. Next is desire. Number four, motivate the reader to action. Don't ever assume ever in your direct marketing and your letter crafting and sending activities that the recipient, that the reader will ever do anything left to their own devices. It's up to you at that moment to guide them all the way through the process. You're like a quarterback in football. You're throwing the football each step to get another first down and get closer and closer to the goal line. When the goal line is in view and you're in scoring distance, you don't walk away. You make certain that everything is in order, and then you put the ball over the line. And in the case of a sales letter, putting it over the line is literally getting their attention, developing their interest, establishing their desire, and then directing them all the way to the end action they've got to take now. Not sometime in the future, but now. Now that's the simplest formula. Now let's talk a little bit about the basic components of your letter, of your direct mail package. And it's called a package because it has a number of strategic components depending upon what your goal is. So the first component is the carrier envelope. Surprisingly, but logically, think about this. If the envelope doesn't get opened, then none of what I just shared with you, none of the laborious efforts, none of the hopes and dreams and financial expectations you've got will be realized. So you got to get the envelope open. There are two very different strategies to getting a letter open. One is to make the letter look like a personalized letter. Have it be personalized. Have it have either just a name or an address or a box number in the upper left-hand corner if it's a number 10, which is a normal letter, or on the back if it's a legal size envelope, and have it have a personalized stamp as if it came from an individual. That tends to get into what's called the A pile. In sorting mail, most people in business and consumers also have what they call an A pile, a B pile, and a C pile. The A pile is personal letters, personal communication that appears to be very important, very individualized, and very timely. They have the B pile, which are things that look worth reading sometime in the future. And they have the C pile, which are things that basically instantly go from the mailbox into their left hand, their right hand, and into the round file. You want to stay first and foremost in the A pile if you can, or in the B pile at worst. You don't want to go in the C pile. Now, if you're going to go in the B pile, the next school of thought is if it's a very topically specific offer, proposition, or subject you are writing to either an existing client or a prospect about, it is worth experimenting putting very specific language on the outside of the envelope. They call it teaser copy, and teaser copy is meant to provocative and ethically stimulate or tease the interest of the recipient enough to crack open the lip of the envelope and get into the letter that's enclosed. And the teaser often, but not always, should be focused on the specific topic of the letter. Because if, for example, you're writing about a financial issue and you can double somebody's net worth, or you can have the time it takes them to retire, or you can increase their standard of living without them having to make another dime, alluding to that in a provocative teaser headline on the outside of the envelope can be very powerful. As I said, there are two schools. One school says it should be as personalized as possible. It should have no teaser copy on the outside, and that does work. But if you have a topic that is of utmost interest already, and you know that about the recipient of the letter, then you sometimes are much better off putting on the outside of the envelope a teaser piece of copy, normally a headline, that alludes or states the benefit or the advantage in a very powerful way, like how to. How to is a great catch-all. If you don't know how to write a good headline, always defer to the concept of how to. Tell them in a sentence or so, how to double your standard of living in the next 5 years. How to retire 10 years quicker than somebody else. How to increase your lifespan by 15 years and be happier than you ever imagined. How to use your free time at home 10 times more joyously. How to get an incredible career boost in your business spending just 3 hours a week listening to tapes, or whatever the benefit is. But first of all, you got to get the envelope open. So again, two schools. My recommendation is test. If it's important enough, don't assume anything. Recent studies have proven something very surprising. Of 100% of the decisions people make about what works and doesn't, that they make just sort of intuitively or through conjecture, 50% of those decisions are totally, totally ineffectual. They don't make any difference. 25% of those decisions are actually dangerous. They negatively impact a result. Only 25% positively impact a result. And this is really wild, 60% of the best results came from a combination of multiple variables being changed. So you got to test. You got to experiment. You do not have the right. You have the obligation to put an assumption to a conservative, quick, inexpensive, but definitive test and let the marketplace, let the people you're trying to reach tell you by their positive or negative vote. So if you're deliberating with yourself, or with people on staff, or with your board of directors, or with the powers to be about whether or not it should be a personalized looking letter or a letter that's got very stimulating teaser copy on the outside, stop debating. You and your team don't have the right, the responsibility, or the knowledge to make that decision. Put the question to the only audience whose vote counts, the people who respond with their phone calls, with their checks, with their credit card orders, with their purchase orders, with their physical response. Try one approach against another. Take a test market of 1,000 or 5,000 or 10,000, depending upon how many total names you're planning on mailing to. Split a smaller quantity than the total universe you're going to mail to in half. Send one the approach in a personalized envelope. Send one of them the approach in a teaser-based envelope, and then look at the results. I guarantee you, one approach will outpull the other by a tremendous margin. And depending on what you're selling, tremendous may be 30%. It can be as much as 300, 500, 2100%, but it will be impactful if you test it. So again, first thing to test is what's called the carrier. It's the envelope. The next thing to test is the sales letter inside. And the sales letter is the actual presentation. It's the beef of your package. It's what relays the product, the service, how it can benefit the client. In short, everything that a traditional verbal sales presentation does. Think about it in its purest sense. The sales letter is your ultimate, it's your quintessential presentation presented at concert pitch, presented with perfection, addressing every objection, overcoming it, never stumbling, never being inhibited, never forgetting a point, going through the most powerful, compelling, and complete presentation possible. And if you don't know how to do it, the easiest and best thing to do is record yourself or your best presenting sales personnel when they are at their best, making a presentation. Tell them to make the best presentation they've ever made, either to you or go out with them. Have the recording transcribed, edit it down, and you will find that in about 90% of the situations, they will automatically produce for you a greater letter than you can get written if you go out to a professional copywriter. Surprisingly, but not, a great sales presentation is very similar to a great sales letter. This AIDA, the ADA, the attention, the interest, the desire, and the action, is the same thing that a salesman or woman does when they are presenting at concert pitch. So it's very, very, very astute to get your best sales presenters recorded, transcribed, tightly edited. And the only thing that might be different is they might present different parts of this AIDA formula in different orders, and you might have to rearrange it, but they'll write your letter or most of it for you. Next, the brochure. Now, I've got to make a very important point here. Not just a lot, but most people who use brochures make a strategic and a cardinal error. They think the brochure is what's designed to do all the work. So they'll send a brochure out in an envelope with either nothing or with a little note, like, here's what I promised to send you. And they put all this onus on a device that was only designed to be a summary, a review, and an embellishment of a much more powerful sales presentation. And the best analogy I can give you is, presume you have really great salespeople on your staff. You don't have to, but let's take that assumption. Would you ever tell a salesman or woman to walk into a prospective client's office, to throw a basic brochure on the client's desk, to zip their lip, to not say a word, but just to point futilely to the brochure and smile at them? Because that's what you do if you just send a brochure out without a powerful sales presentational selling letter to really do the job for you. The letter does the job. The brochure just summarizes, amplifies, and dimensionalizes it. The brochure is not the key selling device. The letter is. The brochure is an embellishment, an amplification, an addition. Most people get it all wrong. So the letter, the envelope first, got to get open. If you get three times as many people opening it, it's axiomatic, it's evident, you're going to get a lot more people responding if your letter is right. The brochure basically summarizes more benefits than features. The brochure should have a headline at the top. We're going to be talking about headlines in a while. We'll continue with more powerful mastermind marketing strategies in the next session. You'll see that headlines are the ad for the ad. They are 80, 90% of the impact of everything you do. A headline, you'll remember, is literally the opening statement that is telegraphed to the reader before they see or think of anything else. In an ad, it literally is at the top. In a sales letter, it can be a headline literally, or it can be the first sentence or the first paragraph of what they hear. It is tremendously important that in that very first impact point, you compellingly convey to the reader that you've got this advantage that they need to get. I'm going to go through some headlines with you in a few minutes. I'm going to go through a fast litany so you can get some ideas. And when I read them to you, you'll be able to modify, extrapolate, adapt, adopt them to what you're doing. But you've got to have a great headline at the beginning of your brochure, and your brochure should have more benefit focus than features. As I said earlier, there's no problem having features, but the features have to be connected to the benefits they produce. There is no marketplace that responds purely to features unless they are so well educated, and that's not going to be 90% of the people you're going to convey to. Even if you're selling ice cream, if you say this ice cream has 8% butterfat instead of 2, and what that means, it's 3 times richer, it's more delectable, it's more filling, it's more enjoyable, it's richer, it's much more robust tasting, that makes sense. But if you say 8% butterfat, that doesn't mean anything. Whether you're selling technical, whether you're selling mundane things, Features are nothing more than a connector or a bridge to the benefits. You got to sell the benefits in the brochure. The next, what's called a lift note. A lift note is a very valuable function to summarize, to embellish, to very, very powerfully and simply restate in like a tight little summary the entire essence of the offer and the payoff proposition. Keep in mind, everything I'm going to share with you, reason why, benefit, payoff, start thinking what's in it for you, the reader, not what's in it for me, the seller. The reader doesn't care about you. You don't really matter in terms of the reader's self-interest. And it's not a dehumanizing statement. It's a clinical statement of human nature fact. People are self-consumed. You are, I am. We're in it for our own best interest. The best way to serve your best interest is to serve first and foremost your clients or your prospects' best interest first. And that means focusing everything on what's important to them. Their idea of value, their idea of importance, their idea of benefits may be very different than yours, so keep that in mind. Finally, if you're selling something that is dispensed by mail, you want an order or a response device, an order form that they either fax back or they put in an envelope. It depends on what you're trying to do. Keep in mind, direct mail, a sales letter, has enormous diverse options it can serve in your business life. You can use it to uncover leads that can come back in that your field salespeople or your telephone people can follow up. You can get people to actually call in or come in. You can use it to set appointments. You can use it to literally sell a specific product or service. You can use it to precede a scheduled call that a sales professional is going to make. You can use it to follow up a call that someone made. You can use it to follow up a sale to make sure people are still excited and eliminate what's called post-purchase dissonance. You can use it as a continual update communication to maintain impeccable rapport and a bonded relationship. You can use it to announce new products or services. You can use it for new promotions, and you can use it for a myriad of other things. Now, let's get into headlines, because I want to start teaching you a bunch of different headline approaches that have enormous utilitarian value. They apply certainly to the beginning of a letter. They apply certainly to any advertisement you would run. They can be modified and applied to the opening phrase you use in person or on the phone. They can be applied to the banner you put in any kind of a public display you use at a convention exhibit, in front of your business, signage on your truck, on your business card, and so many other applications. They can be used as the opening phrase in an email or a fax. So I'm going to go through a number of successful headlines that have been massive producers, massive pullers, massive impact tools for people for years and years, and I will try to give you a broad spectrum so you'll have a reference frame you can draw from. I apologize because I'm reading from a list, so you'll hear the pages turn, but I want to go through this rapidly, but I want to go through this accurately. I have a list of what's called the 100 greatest headlines ever written. These are headlines that endured, produced, delivered powerful results for the people who used it in their ads and in their sales letters for years and years and years. These are headlines that take full advantage of human nature. They take full advantage of the self-serving interest of men and women in businesses. And they lend themselves to incredible translation in your business applications, meaning you can easily apply, adapt, adopt, modify these over. Again, literally as a beginning for a letter or an ad or a brochure. Secondly, as a beginning or a restatement of a sales letter. Third, as something your salespeople incorporate in an adapted manner in any opening statement they say on the phone, in person, or in any other form of selling communication they have with their prospects. The first one, the secret of making people like you. Now think about that. Would you like to know what the secret is of making people like you? If that was in the beginning of a letter, as a headline, or if it said, I'd like to share with you the secret of making people like you, would you want to know more? So take that theme, because that headline sold something like $100 million of products for the person who created it. Take that headline and think of how many ways you can adapt it, adopt it, or modify it to what you're doing, to what you're selling, to what you're saying. And it can be applied a number of ways, not just in letter or ad, but your salesperson can call up and say, Mr. Abraham, I know you're busy, but if you'll give me 5 minutes, I'd like to share with you a short course education on a secret to making more people like and follow your leadership. I think people would say, okay. Next, a little mistake that cost a farmer $3,000 a year. Now, if you were a farmer when this was written, which was about 30 years ago, you'd love to know that. But if I said to you, I'd like to share with you a little mistake your family is making that's costing you $10,000 a year, and you can correct it in 5 minutes, would you like to know more? Or if I said to you, I'd like to share with you a little mistake your business is making that is costing you easily 100 more clients that you could have every week if you just did one thing different. Or I'd like to share with you a little mistake you're probably making that could free up 2 extra hours a day for you at home that you could enjoy for whatever hobbies or personal interest you wanted. Let me take the next one. Advice to wives whose husbands don't save money. Would you like to know that? I mean, if I said, Mr. Executive, if you've got a sales manager that doesn't know how to get maximum performance out of the sales force, I'd like to share with you some advice right now that will help you increase the results instantaneously. And again, I'm trying to go fast, so I'm just giving you some headlines that are proven, enduring, just home run hitting successes, and they have been for years and years, and they are easily, they are instantly, and they are very powerfully adaptable to anything you use, sales letters or otherwise. This is a fun one. Are you ever tongue-tied at a party? Now think about that. That's pretty provocative. If somebody said that to you, would you want to know more? Or if they said, are you ever at a loss of words when somebody comes up and talks to you? Or are you ever insecure when you're in a social setting and don't know really what to talk about? Or again, over and over, I'm just trying to give you some great headlines that can be modified. How I improved my memory in one evening. Would you like to know that? If you said, I'd like to tell you how we've helped people transform their bodies in 1 week worth of work, or I'd like to share with you how we've taught businesses how to double their revenues in 90 days or less. You understand what I'm saying, obviously. You take a headline I share here, you modify it. I'm going to give you a formula for learning all the great headlines out there and getting all your friends and your colleagues and your vendors and your staff helping you do it in a minute. Next one. Discover the fortune that lies hidden in your salary. Think about the implications of that. Not just of that headline, but of all kinds of modifications. If you said, discover the fortune that lies hidden in your existing client base. Discover the fortune that lies hidden in your current finances. Discover the joy that lies hidden in your personal life. I mean, you can adapt it, modify it to all kinds of other things. How I made a fortune with a fool idea. F-O-O-L, fool idea. Think of how many ways you might be able to modify that to your own situation. I'm going to run through a bunch of them quickly without making any more parenthetical comment because I want to stimulate your mind. Whose fault is it when children disobey? Have you any of these symptoms of nervous exhaustion? Have you a worry stock? How a new kind of clay improved my complexion in 30 days. 161 new ways to a man's heart in this fascinating report for cooks. These are ones that generated hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars and were used by their creators over and over and over again and are still being used today. They are what's called perennials. They are ones that will work for you with modification. Is the life of a child worth a dollar to you? Do you do any of these embarrassing things? 6 types of investors. Which group are you in? Today, add $10,000 more to your estate for the price of a good dinner. Does your child ever embarrass you? to people who want to write but can't get started. They laughed when I sat down to the piano, but when I started to play. This is going to transform your effectiveness, but keep in mind, everything I'm giving you, you can use literally, you can use figuratively, meaning you can modify it. It can be used exactly that way. You can incorporate it into opening paragraphs of a letter. It can be something your salespeople use. How to do wonders with a little land. Little leaks that keep men poor. How much is worker tension costing your company? To men who want to quit work someday. Buy no desk until you've seen the sensation of the business show. Right and wrong farming methods and little pointers that will increase your profits dramatically. Did you ever see a telegram from the heart? It's a shame for you not to make more money when these men do it so easily. Thousands now play who never thought they could. Make this 1 minute test of an amazing new kind of shaving cream. Okay, now I'm going to give you a formula and I'm going to go through a really rapid litany of headlines. First one, the headline, 17,000 blooms from a single plant. What are you doing here? You're measuring the size of the claim. Next one, in 2 seconds, bare aspirin begins to dissolve in your glass. What are you doing there? You're measuring the speed of the claim. Next one, 6 times wider washes. What are you doing there? You're comparing the claim. Next one, melts away ugly fat. What are you doing there? You metaphorize the claim. You're analogizing it to something else that people relate to. Next headline, tastes like you just picked it. That sensitizes the claim by making the prospect feel, smell, touch, see, or hear it. The next headline, at 60 miles per hour, the loudest noise in the Rolls-Royce is the electric clock. That demonstrates the claim by showing a prime example. The next one, how a ball-headed barber saved my hair. That states the claim as a paradox. The next one, shrinks hemorrhoids without surgery, removes limitations from the claim. The next one, 9 out of 10 decorators use one-to-weave carpets for long life at low cost. That associates the claim with values of other people with whom the prospect wishes to be identified. Relieves congestion in all 7 nasal passages instantly. That shows how much work in detail the claim does at one time. The next one. Here's what you do to get rid of pimples fast. It offers information about how to accomplish the claim. Next one. Here's what doctors do when they feel rotten. It ties authority to the claim. The next one. Before Wheezo, hay fever medication made you drowsy. With Wheezo, you can have relief and be fully alert. What that does is show you the before and after claim. These are all powerful and very successful headlines. Announcing, guided missile spark plugs, stresses the newness of the claim. Would you believe it? I have a cold, states the claim as a case history question. Floats fat right out of your body, connects the mechanism to the claim in the headline. When you're weary with daytime fatigue, take Alka-Seltzer. Gives a name to the problem or need. Very important. You can create a proprietary problem that your product or service alone resolves, solves, or avoids. Very powerful, very powerful. One of the classic examples is the sinus headache. The sinus headache was a concept that Excedrin created. Didn't exist. You can do that too. I can go on and on, but you're getting the idea. Well, now you got a great understanding and a context of how to use powerfully crafted sales letters and the headlines that support them in the most effective and diverse way in your business. So if you've never used sales letters strategically, if you've never even used them at all, now you know how to use them for an abundance of different strategic and profitable opportunities that present themselves daily. And it should give you a decisive, not only an advantage against everybody else you compete against, but it should give you so much more leverage and effectiveness in what you're doing, because now it becomes one of the integrated tactics you use in the system, in the optimal success system you build for your specific business. With that stated, we got a lot more ground to cover, so let's go on to the next section. I'd like to talk to you about something critically, vitally, and wonderfully important to your business success and continued growth. And that's the keys to quantum growth and breakthroughs. Very important. It's going to change your strategic thinking, your philosophy from today forward. Now you'll remember, it's easier in business to produce geometric growth than linear growth if you do the following things. Number one, always work on the three-way to grow a business model. Remember, you increase more clients, you increase the size of the transaction, you increase the frequency or the utility, the number of other things you can do often with that client. Number two, you no longer operate your business in the diving board theory of business growth, which is singularly. You start putting in pillars to your power Parthenon to bring about geometric growth. The next thing you do is you're constantly developing multiple strategies in each of those categories. For example, we talked earlier about the fact that nobody has even one referral generating system in place when, in fact, I've got 93. And as I told you, you can get all 93 from Nightingale. So after you're done with this program, if you're ready to take it to a higher level, they've got a lot of other things that can dimensionalize it. But you're committed constantly to engineering geometric, integrated, systematic growth in your enterprise. If you're going to do that, the way to do it is by engineering a continuous array of constant qualitative breakthroughs. Breakthroughs in strategy, breakthroughs in marketing, breakthroughs in innovation, breakthroughs in the way you manage your business. How do you engineer breakthroughs? You do it by consistently traveling outside your business and outside your industry and examining, analyzing, evaluating, and studying the approaches, the strategies, the principles, the mechanisms, the processes that other industries use to accomplish the same goals you're after. How do other industries target their clients? How do other industries contact their clients? How do other industries sell them directly in direct mail? You constantly examine, evaluate, monitor, and adapt those techniques, and you funnel them over to your business. How do you do it? You do it by being systematic. You don't do it by wanting and wishing. You do it by literally doing. You first start disciplining yourself to start looking at things you've never studied before. No matter what industry you're in, you start traveling outside of it. You start getting all of your friends in other industries to collect for you the following. Number one, their trade journals so you can read them. Number two, all of the selling presentations and approaches they get. Whenever they get mailing offers at home, at work, you tell them don't throw them out. Put them in a box so you can study them. You tell them to throw their trade magazines in a box when they're done with them so you can read them. You start looking at all the different ads in magazines, at all the different ads in Sunday papers. And if you live in a small community, you start subscribing to the Sunday New York Times, the Sunday Chicago Tribune, the Sunday Los Angeles Times, the Sunday San Francisco Chronicle. Because in one of those Sunday papers, there may be $20 or $30 million worth of advertising ideas you can borrow. You start taking time off on the way to work, on the weekends, on the way home, and you stop at different retail facilities and you let them sell you and you start looking at the different approaches they take. When you drive down the boulevard, you look at the signage, you look at the banners, you look at the phrases. when you're going by car dealers. You look at what they say, because things that get your attention get other people's attention too. And you realize human nature is immutable. No matter what you're selling, people respond to the same basic stimuli. So you want to learn what other people have learned. You start studying other topics you've never studied before. You start going to Amazon.com. You start looking at the top 100 or 200 business books. You start looking at the different categories, and you constantly monitor the new releases to see what topics are out there. What topics are there? If you don't read the business section, not just of your local newspaper, but you start doing it. If you don't have time to do it, you start getting someone to summarize it. It's worth it also, if you can afford it, to get college or high school students to read a book a week for you. And the more students you can get, the more summaries you can get, and have them summarize the key essence. Obviously, you should listen to tapes and read books, but if you don't have time, have somebody else do it for you. You should build a mastermind group of people who share different ideas. If you can, start making contact every day with one new high-performing, successful entrepreneur, business owner, or CEO in a totally different industry. Call them up and contact them and truthfully say, my name is whatever, Jay Abraham. I am a high-performance businessman or woman in a certain industry that has no competitive interest in yours whatsoever, but I've learned that you can borrow and share success processes and engineer breakthroughs by learning what other people do and think and believe that's different. So I'd like to suggest that once a week or once a month, we get together by phone or in person and share perspectives. And I'd like to share with you what we do, the way we sell, the strategy we built our business on, the belief systems that we use, the highest and best performing activities we follow, and ask you what yours are. And if you have 10, 20, 50, 100 people doing that with you, and you have 5, 10, 20, 50, 100 friends in different industries collecting all the sales techniques that they get, all the solicitations they get, it's very powerful. If you armed every friend who's in business or just a consumer with a little notebook and a pen, and you said, every time anyone calls you on the phone and gets your attention, anytime anything comes across your desk and gets your attention, anytime anyone calls on you and does or says anything that's compelling, that stops you, that compels you, that inspires you, that excites you, write it down and share it with me so I can translate it to my business. Can you imagine the breakthroughs you're going to be open to? Keep in mind this. The key to quantum performance is to always recognize that you have to optimize. Optimize, again, is getting the highest and the best use of every opportunity, of every effort, of every resource, of every opportunity cost, of every piece of capital or human capital, meaning people you deploy or employ. And you can't get the highest and best until you first know the highest and best options and opportunities out there. You can only learn those by exploring, by examining, by studying, by reaching out and identifying them from other industries. And that's the key to this whole concept. And the only way to do it is to be committed that your goal is to bring in greater performance to everyone else's life you impact. The first group of people you impact are your clients. And their lives can't be impacted at a higher level if you don't study better ways to do it. The people that work for you can't perform at higher levels if you don't give them, if you don't provide them with greater mechanisms, processes, systems, and approaches to use. You can't accomplish any of this if you're not committed philosophically and ideologically to knowing that everyone should get greater and higher performance from what you do for them. This commitment to the geometric growth of your business, to providing greater benefit, greater value, greater payoff to your clients and your team, is going to be the key to your company outperforming, outthinking, out-strategizing, out-marketing, out-earning, out-serving everyone else you deal with. And it's going to also be the key to the passion, the purpose, and the possibilities that will animate your life and liberate your whole mind and make the process of business and the process of doing business and the process of going to your business and the process of thinking about your business exhilarating and so exciting that every day will be a joyous experience for you. Now we're going to deal with something so powerfully simple, so disarmingly powerful, but so frequently overlooked that it would be funny if it wasn't applicable to you also. It's very funny when it's a weakness in your competitors. It's not funny when it's an oversight in your business. And what it is this. We talked earlier about the concept of attrition. Attrition is when a once active client becomes inactive. He or she or that company stops regularly dealing with your business. They stop patronizing you. They stop buying. They stop coming back. They stop giving you purchase orders. What's probably worse than anything is that most companies don't even have a clue who they are and that they've become inactive. First thing you got to do is know on a continuous basis who's buying from you regularly and who isn't. And regular depends on the business. Regular could be weekly, monthly, annually, but there is a pattern. If you look at people's past patterns, when that changes, it's a red flag. Something has gone awry. Now, there are only three primary reasons why any individual or company stops transacting business with any company. And they are easily correctable, and there are profound opportunities that exist in recognizing all three scenarios and acting upon them. Let me tell you what the three are. And again, I'm not going to reveal anything to you that's surprising, but I'm sure it's so disarmingly obvious, it's almost like the forest and the trees. You've never thought about it. The number one reason, they had an interruption in their life and they stopped transacting business with you for no negative reason whatsoever. They went on vacation. They got sick. They moved. They had to travel. They had to work late or two jobs, or any of a number of other reasons, or seasonality happened, and they stopped. Well, keep in mind, today more than ever before, we being creatures of habit, we being so diverted, we being so bombarded with so many requests to prevail upon us for our time, our attention, our money, our loyalty, it is so easy to get philosophically derailed. And because habits, good or bad, are created and are changed in a mere 21 days of consistency, the fact that someone stops dealing with you for less than a month can get them negatively habituated to where you're out of their mind. The easiest and the most powerful way to correct scenario one, when people had an interruption and just didn't start again because they developed a negative habit, is just to contact them. If appropriate, contact them in person. If not appropriate, contact them by phone. If that's not practical, do it by letter or fax or email or all of the above, and sincerely and genuinely from the heart. Contact them and say the essence of, I am concerned. You were a good, loyal client. You stopped dealing with us. Either something is awry in your life or we did something to disappoint you. Either way, you're important enough to us. I don't want that to be the case. If there's something that has happened to you, we're there for you because you're not just sale. You're an important member of our long-term family, and we care about you. Can we do anything to help your circumstances? If we did something unintentionally to offend or dissatisfy you, it is critically important that we correct that. And again, in scenario one, where they stop just because they had an interruption in their life and had nothing adversely whatsoever to do with you, that approach from the heart, expressed by phone, in person, by letter, by fax, by email, will have a profound, positive, and dramatic impact of getting them reawakened to the fact, darn, I did stop. Boy, I had a good experience with him. And 60% of the people that scenario is true for will start buying from you almost immediately again, and they'll probably buy at a higher and more loyal and frequent level than they did originally. So that's scenario one. Scenario two is they did, in fact, have a bad experience. Maybe the product wasn't delivered proper. Maybe the delivery person traipsed dirt on their floor. Maybe he or she was rude to a spouse or significant other or someone in the office. Any of a number of unintentional reasons that you wouldn't have the foggiest and faintest awareness of could have compromised their connection with you. It is critically important that you don't allow